Okay, hi. I'm sorry for a little bit of housekeeping there. But sometimes different things wind up in different parts of the screen, and one cannot know exactly what to do. Anyway, good morning, everyone, and I'd like to welcome you. And Annette and Catherine and Joe and Karen, Leslie, Lynette, Mariana and Martine, Miro and Natni, and Pivy, Risto and Zenaide and Tuya will be here with us shortly. We want to make sure that we do not collide with David Hopper's last presentation on the journey of the soul. So we're probably going to change our esoteric United Nations meeting to Sunday, but that has not yet been recorded on our schedules. So Tuya will perhaps explain that a little later when we get into it. Well, all right. So, welcome all, and we continue in this wonderful book, which is Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2. I think that if you want to read no other book about the progress of the psyche and the kinds of things that we all face on the path of discipleship as we move from one stage to another, then the book Esoteric Psychology, Volume 2, is the book to read. Of course, I have to say, as I've often said, the Tibetan has written one big book. At least that's the way I consider it. And that being the case, everything he writes reinforces everything else that he writes. So, you know, it's best to be, if you can handle it, every day to spend an hour in study in the Arcane School. You know, that was kind of a requirement at a certain point. And I would consider that to be a minimum to spend about an hour minimally in studying the Tibetan's works. Of course, if you're in the Morya Federation, naturally you will tend to spend more time. And if we the day comes when we find ourselves in the new esoteric schools of the future, there'll be a lot more time than that spent in our studies. So I'm just trying to get myself a bracket here somehow, if I can, which is never somehow easy for me. But there we go. And I'll change the color of it in case I have to write something in in what we're going to be looking at. All right. Maybe I'll make it a little bit bigger. Okay. Now we're into the law of group progress. It is the fifth law of the soul, and it is connected, as we have seen, with the spiritual triad, just the way the law of expansive response and the law of the lower four are also called laws of the soul. Yes, they are, but they are requiring a foundation. of the first three laws, the law of sacrifice, the law of magnetic impulse, and the law of service. And then we can get into the law of repulse and fourth law and this law of elevation or group progress. You know, we say, well, what is group work all about? And I'm sure we all have plenty to learn about it. However, if we can somewhat understand the laws of the soul, they actually govern all group work. And, you know, in Cosmic Fire, we might be working with these cosmic laws, you know, like of synthesis and attraction and economy. And in the solar system, we might be working with the seven systemic laws, vibration, cohesion, disintegration. There's a fourth law, which is magnetic control, fixation, the law of love, the law of disintegration and death, those seven. But now, when it comes to our own, the progress of our own psyche, and especially in the context of the group, which is what Master DK hoped to have us achieve, these laws of the soul are paramount. And since we're going to be working with the new group of world servers, we have a compilation here. it's about 274 pages, and we're on page 7. So just to give you an idea of work that we have cut out for us in terms of deepening our understanding. I mean, there's no question, you know, that the Tibetan has been somehow selected as the preeminent messenger, you know, Gemini and Mercury, very important in his chart, and I think Taurus too, which is connected, interestingly, with the wisdom of Mercury. But he's been, you know, however it happened, he really has brought to humanity a foundation of wisdom upon which many others can build. So, you know, given that a great gift has been offered to all of us, I suppose it would be foolish, wouldn't it, not to take advantage of it, especially in intensifying times. Now, I want to do one more thing here. And yeah, okay, good. All right, you know, I only go through the list once. And you know, these morning sessions, I well realize that the people on the West Coast of the United States can join us without terrible difficulty, but once we get into the East Coast, it's the wee hours of the morning. So you know, in the future, when that kind of thing happens to you, you can pick it up on Makara or on our YouTube channel, if you wish. Okay, now, so let's go on a little bit. The law of group progress can only begin to have a conscious effect in the life of the disciple who has been pledged and accepted. Well, you know, this whole question of what are the various stages of discipleship, it again, it's not an entirely concrete matter. It's somewhat fluid. But for practical purposes, we can consider ourselves first as the probationer or aspirant probationer, and then kind of overlapping that is the disciple who's called the accepting disciple, who gives acquiescence to the great teaching and values it and makes the teaching a kind of working hypothesis in the life. Now, that this is still on the, in a way, on the probationary path, which from some perspectives does not end until we are an accepted disciple. Now, once you have accepted that the teaching holds for you great truth and you will work with it in a way that will see it applied in your life as much as may be possible, then we come to another stage where you actually promise something. You make a pledge of commitment. Now, you know, when we're dealing with initiation, and we're told in Initiation Human and Solar, taking the oath, pledge, you know, whichever kind of word you want to use, but of course oath is stronger. Every initiation has an oath, and there's no way to escape that. Now, a pledge is a little milder form of that. It's a form of commitment. And you make a promise now, and you will guide and guard your life to move in the direction of what the great teaching offers us. And before that promise is made, and in other words, before you are a pledged disciple, and you know, you will know whether you have made that promise. You cannot be an accepted disciple. An accepted disciple means the master actually establishes a kind of a continuous connection with you, even though you may not be aware of him. In the early days, a master might look in every 1,000 years, or then every 300 years, you know, on the progress of one who may be heading in the direction of true discipleship. But true discipleship begins with acceptance. But acceptance has to be based upon keen aspiration, the willingness to be tested, the accepting of the premises, the taking of the pledge, and finally, if one is deemed aligned with the master's purposes, because why would he accept somebody that could not work in connection with the objectives that he has for his ashram? Then acceptance can come, and you know, I'm working on that right now. Maybe we'll work on it together, the 6 stages of discipleship. I'm making these video programs which go over these 6 stages and what can be expected and where we will find ourselves. And I dare say that, you know, many of us are moving towards acceptance if we will just hold true to our promise. Now, the accepting of a disciple is never going to occur, or very rarely, maybe in one instance in all of the teaching here. It occurred before the first initiation, but it certainly can occur after. the first initiation, and oftentimes when the second initiation is within sight. And what is, you know, what is it to be within sight? It can be this life, the next life, the next life, you know, the next few lives. If the second initiation is in sight, then the possibility of acceptance can be conferred. But on the other hand, sometimes it occurs earlier. It has a lot to do with your actual relationship to a particular master, often a karmic relationship, often a previous familial relationship. You know, what turns out to be on one level the family ends up later being the ashram, okay? So not all advanced disciples are accepted disciples, and that's kind of a peculiar thing. They forge ahead on their own, and they have not established that kind of acceptance with the master. So anyway, the law of group progress will have the conscious effect in the life of the disciple, not the aspirant, not merely the early probationer, but the disciple who has been pledged, or who has made the pledge and been accepted. Now you can ask yourself, you know, and it's not a short-term question, am I this, am I that? You can think about it. You can think about it. Have you made the pledge? And are the signs of acceptance with you? Have they occurred? Have they not yet occurred? Do you look forward to them? Okay. When he has established, that is the disciple, certain rhythms, when he is working effectively along certain well-recognized group lines, which have been laid out so carefully by the Tibetan as he is assigned the group work to do, you know, let me put that in there. So DK has assigned the group work which is to be done. And when he is definitely and in understanding consciousness, preparing himself for the expansions of initiation, remember, we studied it, how initiation is ruled by the quality expansion in relation to Capricorn. We did that in the Science of Triangles work. The expansions of initiation. Then this law begins to sway him, and he learns to obey it instinctively. You know, that means without having to cogitate about it a lot, intuitively, and also in an intellectual manner, you know what you are doing. So that is an important sentence. When he's definitely conscious and preparing himself, understand when he has the understanding consciousness, not just kind of a light awareness, but a real conception of what he's going through, then the law begins to sway him, and it's not applied in a hesitating manner. It happens, we might say, almost automatically here. Oop. It's too dark. So that's not what I wanted. I wanted something a little brighter. Okay. So instinctively has to do, you know, with everything that's been built into you intuitively is a high reach, because the impressions from above regarding what all this means begin to descend into your consciousness, and they are your guide. And then intellectually, you actually know specifically what the whole process is about. You'll notice DK does some interesting things often. He gives you series of words that begin with the same letter. It's a technique that helps us memorize them and helps his ideas be impressed upon us, you know, like all those five D's, they begin with D, that we say discipline, dispassion, discrimination, decentralization, detachment. You know, that's all about controlling the vehicles, and everything begins with a D. Here it begins with an I. Okay. It is through obedience, notice, you know, occult obedience to the soul, and in this case, to the law. It is through obedience to this law that preparation for initiation is instituted, by the disciple. And why is that? And I would just say, my impression is that initiation is now a group process. And group initiation, more and more, is coming into, necessarily coming to the fore. So when we are truly accepted, and working in the sense that the group will have the progress and not us as an individual, then initiation comes to all. You recall perhaps the esoteric catechism, where the candidate seeking to go through the door of initiation alone finds the door too narrow. But when he or she grasps the hands of the person on either side, and so a group is formed, they all pass through the door with ease, and it is no longer so narrow. So, you know, we have to test ourselves regarding our identification as a group. If we just says, I am, you know, the old egotistical way of doing it, we're not going to achieve initiation. But if we have the I am we consciousness, then it becomes possible. He says, you know, it says, it is through obedience to this law that preparation for initiation is instituted. And what does it mean by that word? You know, somehow manifested, established by the disciple. The previous sentence is so worded because it is important that all should grasp the self-initiated necessity of initiation. It tells us, you know, that the initiate is, in a way, the initiate before being actually formally initiated. We and the group with us have to climb to the point of tension, which is equivalent to initiation, before the word can sound forth, accepted as a group. We become an accepted disciple, and then we become a group probationary initiate. We're not going to, as a group, jump through the third initiation. But it is possible to have initiations of the threshold before the third initiation apply to the group. And we individually and all group members have to self-initiate if we're going to, this is peculiar. We have to self-initiate if we're actually going to take together initiation. So, you know, that's a lot of responsibility, really, isn't it? And if you're going to tread the path of spiritual occultism, you just have to get used to that idea that there will be loads of responsibility upon you and upon the group members with which you may be working, with whom you may be working. So, do you understand, he says, this importance? Well, do we? Do we understand this importance? You know, when you read, you pause. You don't just read, you pause. A hint will come oftentimes when you pause because something has attracted your attention. You don't pause at every sentence, but something has attracted your attention and you dwell on it. We call it, you know, pondering. And it is a particular method of the second ray. Some of the effects earlier mentioned in this initial discussion of this fifth law can here be enumerated. And let us not forget, he always reminds us of how superficially we read, okay? Let us not forget their esoteric, unseen significances. So these are the effects, some of the effects of this fifth law. Number one, the disciple will then learn effectively to decentralize himself. Now, that's one of those D's, isn't it? ABCD. And, you know, to my way of thinking, it's the personality that stands in the center so often. We have a certain, what we might call, space in consciousness. Now, what occupies that space? If it is the personality, the lower ego, that's taking up a lot of room in our space of consciousness, obviously, we are not moving towards decentralization. But okay, if we understand that we can't always be thinking about our little selves, but are much invested in the wider group and the nation, the community, humanity, you know, thinking about the welfare of the others and not just how are we doing, how are we doing, you know, always pulling ourselves up by the roots to see how we're doing. So if this is the word is decentralization. Okay, he will ask nothing for the separated self. Now that's a simple sentence, isn't it? It's a really simple little sentence, but do we realize what it can mean? Because everybody, millions and millions and billions of people are asking something for the separated self. They may ask for the, I mean, you know, people like ourselves, we can ask for the wider self that includes the group, that includes the community, the nation, humanity. But I want what I want when I want it, you know. That's the desire body speaking, and how many people are motivated that way? Oftentimes, in relation to money, to where they may live, to prestige in the eyes of others, to power for the little self, for the satisfaction of the instinctual appetites, all for the little self. You see, this little sentence is, again, separating the sheep from the goats. The goats are the candidates for initiation. The sheep are led and just follow along. So, first, the esoteric and unseen significances we're looking at here. And we're looking at the effects of the fifth law. One can, therefore, says the Tibetan, easily see why aspirants are taught to pledge allegiance to their higher self and to forswear all claims of this separated self. And one can see also why so many react against it. Now just pause for a moment and realize that this is the case. This astonishing rejection of opportunity because of the demand is the case. I play my part with stern resolve, with earnest aspiration. I look above, I help below, I dream not, nor I rest. I toil, I serve, I reap, I pray. I mount the cross, I tread the way. I tread upon the work I do, I mount upon my slain self. I kill desire, and I strive for getting all reward. I forego peace, I forfeit rest, and in the stress of pain, I lose myself and find myself, thus entering into peace. And to all this, I pledge myself to my higher self. So, you know, when we take our pledge of allegiance, okay, it's not to the flag of our nation, although that can be included in the realization of the idealistic note sounded by a flag, but we are really pledging allegiance to the soul. That's so we're asked to do that, to forswear, you know, banish to the side all claims of this separated self. And there are many, and if you're honest with yourself, and I with myself, we'll see the claims that the little self makes, the demands that it makes. Even in this mantra I just spoke, you see many, many claims that the candidate is putting to the side and negating. And people, you know, it's like a test. You get into the arcane school, that's one of the first things they give to you. And will you reject it? Will you react against it? Will I, you know? It encourages aspiration. And here the Tibetan is just being realistic. He says, look, they're not ready for it. And such a pledge, notice, a pledge. We're making a pledge with, I play my part with stern resolve and all that. It's a pledge. And such a pledge, therefore, acts as a great discriminating agent. You know, Alice Bailey, she said, look, the Arcane School and presumably the other schools that are, you know, somewhat modeled on the Arcane School, they're not for everybody. They are for the training of disciples. Real, you know, people who really want to be disciples. And that involves a great deal of mental control and not just kind of doing, you know, doing a little spirituality when it's convenient, as Foster Bailey was joking. They are not ready for it, are we? Or, you know, are we just curious? I mean, how much do we want to really engage with the great wisdom? They're not ready for it. And such a pledge, therefore, acts as a great discriminating agent. As Alice Bailey said, a lot of people came through the Arcane School up to a certain point, and they gained something significant. And then they left because, you know, they couldn't go further. They had reached, as the Tibetan describes it, their high water mark. You've seen sometimes bridges where floods have come through and people somehow mark in paint or some other way how high the water went. Well, every life maybe has a high water mark beyond which it's not possible to go. To those for whom the standard of selflessness is set too high, it is neither understood nor desired. And therefore, the unready criticize it. Why do you have to give all this up? You know, why not live a more balanced life? Sometimes, you know, when you're in Libra, you try to balance the soul demands with personality demands, and you have to wait to Scorpio to let go of the personality demands. So I guess it's a question that each one of us should ask ourselves: how many of us are still under the sway of personality demands? It says later, these same people, they will come back with understanding and take this obligation in the light. And with understanding, they will take this obligation in the light. So it's a good thing, you know, I think in the Moria Federation, we have that in our early work, just as the Arcane School did, and it's a good thing now and then, or even more frequently, to repeat to yourself in the light and with understanding, I pledge myself with stern resolve, which is very much, there's your pledge. There's your pledge right there. If you want to be an accepted disciple. Okay, so that's one of the effects, he's decentralizing himself. So he's asking nothing for the separated self. Just even do that, and that's already a tremendous step. That's a step. And then point B, his eyes are towards the light and not towards desire for contact with the master. Well, you know how often that occurs, that illusion, that glamour, you know. The master told me this, the master told me that, now I'm telling you. And the master himself works with souls, as we see in our triangles meditation. And when we enter the realm of the soul, we are also open to the influence of the master. So if we have this kind of hidden ambition to, well, you know, it's hidden from us, we don't realize we're really doing it, to be somehow close to the master, preferred by the master, complimented by the master. A lot of people fell into big trouble because there was this thought form of the Tibetan floating around, you know, and you know, some people knew better and they rejected it. But this thought form would speak with interesting phrase that he used, good words of mediocre cheer. Oh, you know, like we're watching you and we're for you and we're encouraging you, you know, always the little you was at the center of it. And two of the disciples really fell victim, and it really ripped up their etheric body badly. And DK had to do a lot of repair work, and it slowed the groups down. And I guess the two disciples emerged sadder but wiser, because they, you know, secretly, deep down, they wanted that kind of contact with the master for their personal self. So this, therefore, rules out that spiritual selfishness which has been expressed by the desire, innate and deep, for recognition by one of the great ones. And that's the word. We have to work without hope of recognition, because that would just be once again emphasizing the personality. Why would we want recognition? To feel reinforced that maybe we're somewhat unstable in our approach to the higher truths? Maybe we just want that so-called comfort of closeness to the master and to be assured that all is well with us. I mean, there are many reasons we might want recognition. And by the way, the glamour of recognition is one of those that really fits well with the prevailing sixth ray as it's going out of incarnation. It's the sixth ray type that wants heaven to respond in the affirmative and really encourage the seeker. So we have to, you know, step back and kind of realize that the master recognizes those who recognize the soul. The master recognizes those who recognize the soul and who become the soul. We are the soul, of course, but consciously are we. So the master recognizes those who recognize and become in consciousness the soul. So spiritual selfishness, well, this is common, because still we really care a whole lot about our little self. You know, if we're honest, we're going to find that often to be the case. And when it isn't the case, it's a very good sign. When this freedom from the personal is found, then the master can dare to make contact and establish a relation with the disciple. Then acceptance can come. And it would be well for us to ponder this, he says. Because otherwise, he, you know, the master would just inflame the glamour, you know, and thicken the illusion if before this kind of cleansing had occurred, there was going to be a recognition and a closer contact from him. So he really, you know, cares about the disciple and wants not to retard the disciple's progress. You know, it's like the old saying, I think it's coming from Master Hilarion with the light of the light on the path. And, you know, it's basically saying, don't put a muddy foot on the ladder of evolution, because it's an electric ladder and you will be frozen in place. The mud will cake and you won't be able to move. I'm paraphrasing here somewhat, but that's the idea. You know, clean your feet off before you try to ascend the ladder of evolution, because otherwise you're going to be working against yourself. And that's the same thing with a master. He is an electrical being. And if he gets too close and you're in a very impure situation, then, okay, you're going to be in trouble because your progress will be frozen. And that's why he has to be so careful about whom he approaches. Now, we're talking about these effects. Let's see here. I just want to make sure I'm doing this correctly. The effects of the law of group progress. And we looked at the first effect, and it has two parts. The second effect is short. He will have learned to serve instinctively. Now, if we're always saying to ourselves, okay, now I'm serving, now I'm not, it's a spontaneous thing. You know, in the definition of service, the word spontaneous is used. Why is that? You know, there is a spontaneous outflow of soul energy from a loving heart, and it is regulated by the illumined mind, because there is a caring that the service doesn't just serve oneself. As D.K. tells us under the law of service, we'll probably get to the point where we read that together, that the service of so many people gives more to themselves than it gives to the one served. And you know how it is in society when you've maybe given a lot of money and, you know, you've done something apparently very good, and then people admire you and they fet you and they raise you up, and, you know, you feel very good about yourself because of the return for the service rendered. And oftentimes service rendered, to put it in crass terms, is simply a tax deduction. So, you know, and people do think in this way. So, you know, the motive has to be correct. And we can't, you know, just ponder, now I'm going to serve this person. It has to be an outflow of the soul from the soul-infusing personality. He will have learned to serve instinctively. He may and usually does need to learn to discriminate in his service, you know, because we can't serve everybody and we're not equipped to serve everybody. We have to, where our own abilities meet the need, meeting the need with our own abilities. But his attitude to life and towards all men, and look at this, and this is the Tibetan describing himself. He has been known to be hyper-enthusiastic, at least that's some of the lore that goes around the story of Jwal Kul. But his attitude to life and towards all men is a divine rushing forth to aid, to lift, to love, and to succor. This, you know, nobody who didn't have this as a motive could speak in those words. And this is the Tibetan describing his own attitude. You know, sometimes, I'm not even going to get into it, but, you know, he was so enthusiastic, he even hurt himself. He ran into some kind of door or ledge or something like that. This is one of those old little anecdotes coming from a description of his earlier days. His divine rushing forth it's so inspiring when I read this. I really find it beautiful. Divine rushing forth, not just rushing forth, but divine rushing forth. That makes all the difference. To aid, to lift, to love, and to succor. So he's learned to serve instinctively, and he has to discriminate. That's another effect of this law that we are studying. Now, do I have? Well, yeah, I do. I do. I have time to finish this. And here is the third effect. Okay. He will have learned to use the mind in two directions, increasingly, and at will, and instantaneously. So, you know, these great ones, everything is fluid, flexible, spontaneous, and not obstructed. They have overcome so many of the obstructions that the forces of obstruction usually throw in the way of the average aspirant or disciple. So the parts of this, we can imagine what the two directions are, but okay. A, he can cast a searchlight, the searchlight of the mind into the world of the soul, and know and recognize the truths which must for him become his experienced knowledge. Can we do that? To what extent can we do that? This is our question. Can we really penetrate into the world of the soul and find truth? Because unless we can, we are going to fail in what DK calls occult meditation. And he brings this out right in the beginning of the book, okay? And then point B, he can also cast it into the world of illusion and dispel the glamours of the personal. And when he can do that, then he begins to dispel the world glamours, for he is nearing initiation. And basically, this means the third degree, the dispelling of world glamours effectively. I mean, we can all try, you know, and we do. But we can look down and we can think through, and we have the illumined mind, and we can, as a result, see through the many things that hold many people in a state of captivation. Okay, well, I think that's enough for right now. We seem to be entering into a new area here. And we would be taking up the link of the world groups. And this is still within this discussion of the law of group progress. here are all these laws listed right here, without the listing of the law of the lower four. And then comes the compilation itself about the new group of world servers, which we will go through. I'll try to decide whether, before we get into this, whether we'll work on soul laws and then work with that group that is obliged and pledged to fulfill these soul laws in everyday life. So since these are extracts, I can't really say we're on page such and such, but I will say that our next meeting, whenever it is, will be program number 5. And if we look at the when we'll be doing this again, we'll be able to see very shortly. Okay, so just let me get this straightened out here for a second, and so I know where we are when the next time comes. So we've just ended program 4, and now we're going to begin with program 5. And let's see, group progress. Well, it'll be till next month. And then, of course, the conference is coming up.
Michael, we have the group progress is on the 5th, on the 9th. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Yeah,
I
think April, on the 9th of April.
Yeah,
in the morning.
Let's see if we can do that.
It's going to be 5 a.m.
Yeah, because now we're moving into the daylight saving time. And so we switch back and forth. When we're off daylight saving time, we start at 6 p.m. or a.m. GMT. And when we're on daylight saving time, we are working at 5 GMT. Okay, well, thank you.
So, Michael, yes, a.m., 5 a.m. GMT.
Okay.
The next time.
Thank you.
So I was just thinking, there were many points during this, what we read, but one thing what we read just in the end,
yeah,
about illusion, that on the third decanate of Aries, we have the Perseus who is beheading Medusa.
Yes.
And I'm just, so that just to recognize that that is very important decanate of this whole dilemma of illusions and how we are going to actually build within us something that we can resist and become so powerful. We have to try to find the means. Yes. How Perseus is finding that he has to use Vulcan because he uses the shield. You cannot look into the illusion, into the eyes of illusion.
Yes, and that's the mind. That's where he cannot look at it directly. He has to use the mind first.
Right.
The shield is the mind. It's an indirect way, but it serves him.
But because it is done by Vulcan, so it's the mind which is blended with the will. And you were pointing out already the third initiation. And I was thinking about that. Excuse me, that how actually Medusa became Medusa, something what has to be avoided or something was what has to be recognized. And in her story is the very painful story of to become betrayed by the group. So it is something for us to think about these roots, which are very, very deep in our history of lives, that where, like the innocent human being is betrayed by the group. And from that, in order to somehow survive, comes those wrong images of us, ourselves, from where the illusion starts to grow.
Yes.
And I think it is the as you were pointing out, the third initiation, how in the third initiation we somehow go like into self-search within us and try to see all kinds of tiny things from where we are bound into the matter. But anyway, it just brought to my mind that it is
interesting, somehow, very interesting.
It is somehow sad story, very sad story, how it comes into being. But okay, Michael, there is
we have and people, you can turn on, if you wish, you can turn on your video, because we're into the discussion part now, if you wish to do so. Of course, for some of you, so it's Martin, the middle of the night, I know. Yeah.
Or did you want to say something before I read, Martin?
No, I was just saying they could turn on their video if they want.
But I mean about the illusion, did you wanted to say something?
Oh, well, yes, only the fact that actually we are studying it in our glamour workshop. Tonight is glamour again. We're working on the technique of the presence, and that is the technique which helps to dispel illusion. So actually we are in the illusion dispelling part of the book, and a lot of it has to do with just misinterpreting things. You get certain concrete thoughts about what is real and they're not real at all. And we have to remember that the Lodge of Darkness did a lot to throw, as you say, innocent human beings into illusion. Mm-hmm. So we're working on that tonight at 6 p.m. in our Zoom meeting. Yeah.
Yes, and there was one thing what I was thinking when we were reading this, that how it is important for us to, when we start to be more aligned with the group, to understand what Tibetan says so interestingly about the how we train our brain, that we have to start to first to work with our emotions, to train our emotions to be certain way, and then the brain consciousness start to be aware of things what should be aware of. So the process is very interesting. And then when we were thinking about the, you said about the people who do not recognize first, and who would be somewhat there to make a pledge, but they go away, but they come back with understanding. And the glamour meditation, we say this, which is very powerful, the whole process. Radiance are we and power. We stand forever with our hands stretched out. So to take our co-workers or our friends beside us, that we hold them, linking the heavens and the earth, so how we are linked with the soul, and then we are still here, the inner world of meaning and the subtle world of glamour. We reach into the light and bring it down to meet the need. And that, I think, is the key thing, that we meet the need so that we reach into the silent place and bring from thence the gift of understanding. But yes. I think that to gain the understanding, we have to then before that start to respond to the need, what is around us.
He says it's a very high psychic power to recognize need and to respond to it. True need, not just desire. The recognition of the need of others is a high psychic power. So it doesn't, it's not like we usually think of with psychism, but it is a deep soul. It's a higher type of psychism to recognize need. Yeah, exactly.
And the real spiritual power then.
Yes, yes.
So Martin says, take yourself out of the picture. A piece of advice to help the ego let the space. Decentralization. I don't remember where I read or heard it, read in DK or read or heard from one of his disciples. Yes, I got it, Dina, volume 1, page 655. It is simply the problem of self-forgetfulness. When you have forced yourself out of your picture and have learned to be silent as to yourself and what you think and feel and do, my brother, the richness of the contribution you will have to give will be so great that your field of service and your power to cooperate with the hierarchy will be greatly expanded.
That's beautiful and important. And of course, he says, simply the problem of self-forgetfulness. And interesting about forced yourself out of the picture. These are DK's words, and sometimes he applies rather strong methods. But at the same time, if we're involved all the time in thinking, I'm forcing myself out of the picture, I'm forcing myself out of the picture, I'm not thinking of myself, you see, then in fact, we are thinking of ourselves as one who is in the center and is being forced out of the picture. So it's not quite there yet, is it? True, spontaneous self-forgetfulness in the need of the moment for other people in the group and wider context, that is a higher step than concentrating on forcing yourself out of the picture. You know how it can be. You concentrate so much on getting rid of the obstacle that that concentration becomes an obstacle in itself. So, you know, deep understanding is needed to realize how negligible the little self, usually in the center of one's field of consciousness, how negligible it really is. Without the understanding, in my view anyway, just simply struggling to get rid of yourself is not good, you know. And DK talks about that a lot. Some of you are trying so hard to love, you don't love. You know, you're trying so hard to do something good that all of your effort is on the trying and the good doesn't get done. So let's keep the understanding factor in mind. Okay, what else now here, Tuya? You're going to read these? Yeah, of course, DK does use the word force. He does use it. But, you know, to me, it's force with understanding. In other words, and that's what happens with the Hydra, doesn't it? You get on your knees, just like a weightlifter often does, and you lift that Hydra up into the air of the enlarged perspective. And the Hydra dies because of your deep intuitive understanding of what it really is when you have the Buddhic plane perspective. It's not that, oh, you know, I'm holding this Hydra up and I, you know, and it's going to die because of the air. No, it's going to die because you have a wider, broader, more inclusive understanding of the illusion, the glamour that it really is. And then you don't want it anymore. And it's no longer fed by desire.
Yeah, there is this step of the become, how do you say, when you become humble.
Yeah, humility, humble, yeah.
Yeah, but there is the moment of Capricorn energy which comes into action, and then you kneel down, and then, as it is said, by kneeling we rise, and then it for disciple or for that to be initiated becomes the moment when he is completely open.
We really
completely giving up.
We really see it. You see, that's the important point. It's in the higher light of Mercury. It's occurring in that field of energy that we call the light of day, which is connected with Scorpio. So, and then, you know, humility too is defined as an adjusted sense of right proportion. So, you know, whatever loomed so big, you know, the personality is so big, it starts to shrink when right proportion, which is humility, takes over your consciousness. And you just begin to become what I would say in Leo, the vanishing point. You become the relinquished point. Relinquished means to give up, you know. So you give it away. So you the big fat ego, which you master. I'm using Master Moria's words. He says the ego is nothing but a big ball of fat. That's what he says. Okay, so it shrinks down and down and down and down. Why? Because you have a sense of proportion, which is adjusted, and you see how big you are when compared to all the vast world in which you are just a tiny speck. So, you know, the consciousness makes the Hydra die, and it's the humbled, the word is not humiliated, it's the humbled consciousness which makes the Hydra die. Okay, what else do you?
I don't see anything.
Does anybody want to say anything or write anything further? Because we're having a little discussion right now about all of this that we have worked on this morning. The law of group progress with three effects. The first effect being decentralization and its subparts. The second effect, serving instinctively and using the mind in two directions. So let's look at that. Decentralization. Oops, I'm in the wrong place. I want to be here. So what is the matter? Why am I not getting this? Okay. I'll get it. Yeah. So decentralization. That's number one. What was number? The second effect was serving instinctively, serving spontaneously. Serving spontaneously. And what did he say? Instinctively, intuitively, intellectually. And finally, the third point, the third effect, using the mind above and below. Okay, or just using the mind in two directions. Now, just test yourself on this, you know. Just pause for a minute. And, you know, maybe one of these is working better for you than another. Maybe one of them still needs work. They will reinforce each other, obviously. If you are decentralized as regards your personality, it will be easier to serve spontaneously without always referencing yourself, now I'm serving, and so forth. And you'll have a more flexible mentality to look into the soul and to look into the normal worlds. As it says in the mantram, to look above, to help below. I would strongly recommend that if you have not memorized that mantra, that pledge, that it will do a great deal of good in making you truly a pledged disciple, to use that mantra and to use it by memory. I solemnly pledge myself, you know, to play my part with stern resolve, etc. And I'm just going to try to see where you can get that. Excuse me.
Michael, while you are searching it, I will read Baby what she says.
Okay.
Somehow this seems like the battle with addiction. There is an addiction to oneself. One is helpless with until healing comes.
Yes, that's a good way of looking at it, I think. I think it's, we are so habituated to thinking of the little self that it's, you know, it's a simple sentence, but it's, there's an addiction and we can't take our eyes off the little self. But when, you know, here, what Alice Bailey says is to replace a poor behavior with a better one, a poor thought with a better one. In other words, to become so interested in something else that our addiction, our fascination, our attachment to personality living begins to die of attrition. It just doesn't get nourished because our interest is elsewhere. So I do agree that it's quite interesting, that comparison. Now, take a look. Here it is. It's on Discipleship Volume 1. And page 561. There it is in red. I play my part with stern resolve, with earnest aspiration. It's called the obligation. I look above, I help below. I dream not, nor I rest. It's very rajasic. You know, we have tamas, rajas, and sattva. This is a very active kind of approach. I toil, I serve, I reap, I take the karma, right? I pray, even Jesus prayed, the Christ prayed. We can't discount prayer, especially selfless prayer. I mount the cross, fixed cross. I tread the way to, in this case, the way of initiation, not the way of higher evolution. I tread upon the work I do. I don't make a big deal out of it, you know, and always pointing to people, look what I've done, look what I've done. No, I'm always moving forward. I do the best job I can and continue to move forward. I mount upon my slain self. My little selfhood is no longer a great factor in my life. It is slain in terms of its desires, and therefore I enter a higher world of lighted, loving soul recognition. I forego peace, the peace which is just pleasantness, you know. It's there's a difference between peace and peace. And the greater peace requires a dynamic balancing of energies, and the lesser peace, oh, just leave me in peace. Leave me in peace, you know. This is not wanting to enter into the struggle. I forfeit rest. Well, I think a lot of us know about that, staying up late, getting up early, you know, all that. And in the stress of pain, which will come when you move against established patterns, I lose myself, my lower self, and find myself as a soul and enter into the higher peace. It's a wonderful mantra, and it's found on a couple of pages. This is page five, whatever, of Dyna 2, 561. And there it is again, in Initiation Human and Solar, on page 212 and 213. And maybe even one more place, I'm not sure. No, those two places, you will find it. So, you know, maybe some of you will make it your project if you really mean business and are not rejecting the demands. You'll memorize it and use it as your pledge, which will go far in opening the door to accepted discipleship whenever that is seen to be appropriate by your own soul and by the master. Okay, is there anything else that we've got going here? Anybody want to speak, or?
There is no one.
What? No, I don't see anybody.
No.
Okay. Right, well, friends, look, like I was saying, and Tuya is going to say that we're going to be doing the Esoteric United Nations on Sunday, not on Saturday. We are sorry that you may have a weekly schedule that says Saturday, but David Hopper's been doing a wonderful job with his Journey of the Soul, and he has scheduled that since September. So obviously we cannot collide with that. And the next day we will do the Esoteric United Nations, though I think we do have the new moon meditation on Saturday, don't we? And it says also here to you, climate, are we going to do climate?
I'm just checking now the March, one second. Yeah, so then tomorrow it is 9:30 a.m. It's the new moon meditation starting.
And then the new moon itself is at,
Yes, new moon is something like 10:20 a.m.
I hope so, because it says down here, sun into Aries at 9:37. That's an ingress, isn't it? So we'll have to kind of...
Michael, you're 1 week off.
No, tomorrow is the 13th. Tomorrow is... Right. Oh, you're right, of course. Okay. Of course. Okay, good.
And then climate, we have 6 p.m. GMT.
Yeah, okay. So climate, 6 p.m. GMT, and new moon starts at 9:30 and a.m. and right. GMT. And then an hour later, roughly, or 50 minutes later, we'll have the actual new moon. Exactly. Okay, great. Well, thank you, everybody. Since there's no more, apparently, to discuss, of course, there's lots to discuss, but on the Law of Group progress, we'll continue with it when we next have the opportunity to do so. Of course, yes, dear. Wait one second. I have one thing to say. It doesn't mean that you can't be reading on your own between times, because what we're doing here is offering an opportunity for a little bit of meditation and discussion on these themes. But the more you read, the more you study with care, the better prepared you will be to enter into the discussions. Yes, now go ahead to you.
So let us end all reading this mantra and then say one Om.
Which mantra do you mean, dear?
What you have there. I play my part.
Okay, hold on. Let me get it.
You have that in your screen.
Good.
So shall you do that?
Okay, and we'll all do it together. Why don't you do it? And then we'll all do it together silently with your, you know, at home.
Okay. So let us center ourselves and align with the group. And let us really try to have some kind of sense of the group, the quality of the group. Recognizing our part in the group. And also understanding that the group is not only that which is on physical plane. Let us say together the mantra. I play my part with stern resolve, with earnest aspiration. I look above, I help below. I dream not, nor I rest. I toil, I serve, I reap, I pray. I am the cross. I am the way. I tread upon the work I do. I mount upon my slain self. I kill desire and I strive, forgetting all reward. I forego peace. I forfeit rest. And in the stress of pain, I lose myself and find myself. And enter into peace.
Oh. Oh. And you know, you notice you have two versions here, and this one is less dualistic. I am the cross, I am the way. Instead of I mount the cross, I tread the way. So, you know, sometimes I can understand why they use the other one first, because people have to understand I am the cross, I am the way. That takes some understanding. And then we usually end by saying, to all this, I most solemnly pledge myself, invoking my higher self. That is added on to it, at least in the Arcane School. You know, 50 years ago when I began work with them, that was there. To all this, I most solemnly pledge myself, invoking my higher self. So now, Tuya, do we have anything to say then about the time in which we do the Esoteric United Nations, or will we talk about that tomorrow?
Well, it is marked at 8 p.m. GMT on Sunday, but that has not yet gone out, I think so.
So, but if David Hopper's...
No, Michael, dear, it is on Sunday. David is on Saturday.
That way, I was just going to say that if you want to pick up David's last lecture on the journey of the soul, then it would be at, I think, 8 p.m. Tomorrow. So 8 p.m. GMT. And then we'll see you in the morning tomorrow for the new moon. And we'll see you tonight for glamour. And when I say morning and night, I mean here in Europe, okay? And then on Sunday, we will have our Esoteric United Nations. Okay, is that it then? I think so.
That is it. Bye-bye from Lapland.
Okay. All right, everybody. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. And we'll see you soon. Again, we'll keep working, right? We'll all keep working together until we achieve. Oh, that's nice. Someone just said to me that if I want colors, I can go to the bucket on the right. If the underlining tool, you will find many colors there. Okay, I have to figure that out. Okay, the bucket on the right. Well, I'll just look for that. Thank you, everybody. Lots of love to everybody. Many blessings. And we'll see you this evening, at least in Europe, for the continuation of our glamour work, which is boiling away under the surface. So we'll work on that tonight. Okay. And bye-bye to all for right now. And Tuya, I will give you a call.